From LPL Financial, welcome to Market Signals. From LPL Financial, welcome to Market Signals.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest LPL Market Signals podcast. Jeff Buchbinder here, your host for this week, with my friend and colleague, Dr. Quincy Crosby. How are you today, Quincy?
Fine, thank you. So thanks for inviting me, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course. I'm glad you're here because we've got a lot of economic topics to talk about, maybe a little global too. As we're recording this, it's actually April Fool's Day, April 1st, 2024. Hopefully you believe what we say. We are going to tell you what we really believe, and we'll hold off on the April Fool's jokes maybe until after we're done recording. So here is our agenda. Oh, actually, also happy birthday to my mom. She's an April Fool's baby. So we've got market recap first. Hey, more new highs. I think that's 22 this year. Really remarkable. This market just keeps going higher. Next, we'll talk about the Friday data. So the markets were closed for Good Friday, but we had the PCE inflation report come out anyway. So we'll recap that. Quincy, you did the week in market commentary this week about IPO activity, which is a really interesting topic for a few different reasons. So we'll walk through that. That's available on LPL.com. And then lastly, of course, preview the week ahead as we do every week. So all-time highs. Not only do we have 22 all-time highs this year, but we have a five-month win streak now in the books. History tells us that after a five-month win streak, you tend to go higher over the next year. History also tells us after a really strong Q1, you're very likely to be up in the subsequent 9 months. So, you know, very likely to be up this year from where we are today. And the chart looks really good. You know, I think, Quincy, one thing that's interesting to me about this chart, not just that it's going straight up, but that the on the bottom panel, you see there's not a lot of stocks overbought, right? 21% of the S&P 500 over its 70 RSI breakpoint or threshold that marks overbought. And we have pretty good breadth still. I think the percentage of stocks in the S&P 500 over the 200-day moving average is now 85%. That'll come down a little bit on Monday. You know, as we're recording this, the market is down just a little bit in the early afternoon hours. So, but nonetheless, pretty good breadth, which is a sign of a healthy market. So, Quincy, I'm kind of leading the witness here, but do you think this market can keep going higher? Are we due for a pullback? Maybe all of the above?
Well, all of the above. I mean, we're due for a pullback at some point. Markets tend to pull back after moves, overbought. But as you and I know, a market could keep going overbought for quite a time, just the way they can be oversold for quite some time. However, at some point, something comes along to help the market pull back, to recharge, to recalibrate, getting it ready for the next level after a pullback. The question really is if it is a 5% pullback or 10% pullback, and then do we get the bears coming out trying to convince themselves and the market that this is now leading to a bear market? History, as you show, dictates that will be a pullback that will be normal, that will be healthy and reinvigorate the bull. You know, the market is up. S&P 500 is up 75% of the time. So the question really for the market is, how do we get there? What path are we going to take to get there? And that's what we have to consider is, you know, how do we see this pullback when it does arrive, and whether or not the pullback leads to breaking some of those really important levels in the S&P 500 that then shoots the market down more than that. That's going to be on the market's mind. And Jeff, as always, it will be when we have dip buyers coming in, as they do, even a small rally or you know, I hate to call it a dead cat bounce because that is so awful to say. But the question will be, what are they buying? Are they buying defensive names, defensive sectors, or will we see the continuation of optimism and have the semiconductors move higher, the consumer discretionary technology move higher? That's what we have to be on watch for, is what leads the market after a potential
market table here, because we saw a little bit of rotation last week, no doubt. I mean, the best performer last week was utilities, up 3%. We haven't seen much of that lately. And you see the cyclical value sectors do well, right? Energy, well, healthcare isn't really cyclical, but it's certainly value. Real estate, materials, right? These areas that have not done well up until recently led this week. And so the market is just looking for something besides tech to buy. And so we could have a scenario where the market, the headline market doesn't move much, but under the surface you get, a lot of let's call it musical chairs. That cyclical value or defensive value or a little of both strength last week actually led to value outperforming growth by quite a bit. You know, you had the growth index here. We show the mega cap growth index down 0.6%. And the value index up 1.2%. So pretty big dispersion there. I don't think there's anything really too exciting to highlight on the international side, other than, I guess you're finally starting to see Japan slow down a little bit after just such a strong year in yen. We're still up 21% year to date. I guess the economic data, Quincy, in Europe's been getting a little bit better. And the performance is pretty good. It just hasn't been able to keep up with the with the S&P 500. Any thoughts on the international markets here? Anything catch your eye?
I do, because we're seeing reports, and it's data driven, that hedge funds are placing more in Europe than they have in obviously a very long time. And it's predicated on a belief, on a narrative, that the European Central Bank could actually cut rates before the Fed does, especially if overall the inflationary pressures ease at a faster clip than, say, in the U.S., and also the weakness, for example, in the engine of growth in Europe is Germany. You saw some of the surveys coming out of Germany, sentiment surveys, also climbing higher. Normally, that happens. We've seen it over the last number of months when the market believes that we may see a rate cut coming. One other part of this narrative, Jeff, is some of the outspoken officials, not necessarily on the dovish side, on the ECB, suggesting that by keeping rates higher for longer may do more damage to the economy than cutting rates a bit sooner. So I think this has probably gotten the hedge funds' attention. Remember, they're hedge funds. They hit it with something else. We always have to remember that. And they may not be in there very long if it doesn't happen. And also, if it happens, it may just be a very attractive trade for them. We have to remember that. But we are seeing hedge funds allocating more towards EFA and Europe in particular.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch. I mean, the good news, I guess, is for folks who are globally diversified, you're doing just fine in Europe. But we really focus on the relative. And if Europe can't outpace the U.S., then, we don't find that particularly exciting. Still something to watch. And that's some interesting insights there you share. How about China, Quincy? I mean, the market continues to struggle, but we actually got some pretty encouraging manufacturing data out of China over the weekend.
Yeah, we wrote about that this morning in the Daily Market Update. And that is the Caixin, which, by the way, is quote unquote private. They do surveys. That their survey indicates that manufacturing has finally moved into expansion territory just slightly. And also that consumer spending also moved into a positive territory, again, slightly, with 50 being the line in the sand. Under 50, it is contraction; above is expansion. They cite that the companies that they monitor, and this is the Caixin, they survey, I think about 630, 640 companies. They typically focus on companies that manufacture, but they are also exporters. Whereas the government goes and just goes to all of the manufacturing companies in the country, and that's thousands of companies, small, medium, and large. But in any event, the CACSIN found that it has been climbing higher, and it matches the other numbers indicating that exports have been climbing higher. Now, one thing we have to remember, and that is that the government, Beijing, has made it very clear to virtually every company, every bank in the country, do not divulge information, particularly if it is negative. So even though we have this positive number, and it is good, as long as it is underpinned by actual data, data that we don't have to question. That's why the many investors pay more attention to the CACSIN, believing they have extremely good contacts and contacts who will speak the truth about the underpinning numbers.
Very interesting. Yes. Yeah. So sure, the tone is maybe getting a touch better, but again, we'll watch the markets and see if. China can get any traction, but we continue to be underweight emerging markets, overweight the U.S. Let's turn to bonds and commodities. I mean, one way that the better growth in China potentially shows up is with higher commodity prices. So we had, rising commodity index broadly. We had rising energy prices last week. We had a strong week for precious metals. Gold's setting more all-time highs, just like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. Yeah, we'll continue to watch that, but that might be it's inflationary, obviously, but it might be a positive growth signal as well that maybe, some of these economies outside the U.S. can start to help global growth a little bit more. And the bond market, was real strong last week. It's weak today, but, the good news last week, I mean, certainly, first of all, the inflation data was in line. But secondly, you had the market digest all of these treasury auctions, mm-hmm. right? That was a risk. If the market can't take down those auctions successfully, you can see rates higher. They are higher today, but they behaved pretty well last week, which is a positive sign. Thoughts on the bond market here, Quincy?
Well, yes, absolutely. The 7-year auction actually was bid by the foreigners, which we watch because foreign is sporadic. Foreign takedown is sporadic. It was strong. And what happened was the market climbed higher as the 10-year yield after the 7-year auction closed, the 10-year yield came down and came down forcefully. It really helped ignite the market and the market just climbed. By the way, Jeff, this was before we heard from Christopher Waller with his commentary about rate cuts. Thank goodness, because the market really did surge.
Yep, Chris Waller, Fed governor. And then Powell spoke on Friday, and that pretty much, I guess, was kind of repeating the same messages, right? We'll show you the 2-year yield here in a minute, and you'll get all judged for yourself. But generally speaking, I think what we got was as expected. So, the sharp sell-off in the bond market today on Monday is a little bit surprising, but so this is from our chief economist, Jeffrey Roach, and he makes this inflation heat map, which I think is really helpful. The line I want to point your attention to is the last line. It's PCE deflator, core services ex housing. This is the problem, right? This is the number that's been sticky, that's been stubborn, right? And it's starting to come down. I mean, there are other, rents, you look a couple of lines above that, and you see rents still 5.8. That's certainly sticky too. But outside of rents, which will come down, we see it in the real-time data. Outside of that, the inflation picture is getting better. What were your thoughts on Friday's data, Quincy?
Well, I think, as you said, it was within consensus. What we saw was a little bit tad cooler month over month and a little bit hotter year over year, which was, by the way, within consensus. So whenever something comes in within consensus, the market takes a deep sigh of relief. Except had it been cooler year over year or even colder within month over month, the market today would have been rejoicing, rejoicing the fact. But still, we're seeing over 50%, and now it's about 64-65% probability for a rate cut in June. But that has come down dramatically from where it was some months ago. This week, we have a very important data coming out, especially with the payroll report. But Fed speak, oh my goodness, this is like, if you enjoy Fed speak, you will be delighted this week, every minute of the day.
Who doesn't?
Right? I mean, I can't believe no one wants to hear that. But I'm paying very close attention to Loretta Mester, because she is another pragmatic hawk, just as Christopher Waller. They are pragmatic hawks, and the market tends to listen to what they have to say. But on the other side of the ledger, other side of the monetary aisle, Rafael Bostic, who is known as being very dovish, he is the head of the Atlanta Fed, who really initially thought we needed to have more rate cuts, is now talking about, well, maybe one rate cut and then we pause for a while. When you have a dove suggesting that, you have to pay very close attention. And the question, as we've talked about internally, Jeff, and we share this with our audience, is an election is coming up. You could argue all you want that it has nothing to do with the election. It doesn't help. It doesn't hurt. But we all know we don't want to see a tug of war over this, which suggests that the Fed, if they are going to cut, perhaps it has to be June or July and then wait.
Yeah, the odds of a June cut are 60% in Fed funds futures markets right now, although that,
yes,
this morning, maybe it's come down a little bit since then. I mean, it looks like, I mean, even though we've heard this story from Powell before and the data from Friday was in line, the bond market is reacting negatively to that. We're actually up about 13 basis points now on the day on the 10-year.
Look at manufacturing. The ISM manufacturing survey actually now moved into positive territory. It has been under tremendous pressure on the regionals, have been under terrible pressure. And yet that ISM manufacturing came in just above 50, which is good news, but is it good news if you want a rate cut?
Sure. And so stocks are probably reacting to that change in yields today more than anything else. But, you know, we've come a long way, too, in a short period of time, as we all know. So there's probably just a little bit of profit taking by some as well. So, you know, here's kind of a proxy for what the Fed rate cutting cycle is going to look like over the next 2 years. Right. This is the 2-year treasury yield. You know, 470 when I ran this. That's kind of the recent high right in this little range. So hopefully that continues to hold. I guess 475 is the roughly 4-month high. So what does this tell you, Quincy? Is this consistent, you think, with you know, let's call it maybe 3 cuts this year and a few more next year, or do you think this might be mispricing the potential you know, rate cuts we have ahead?
Perhaps mispricing it, because one thing the market does not want, Jeff, and we've talked about this so often, they don't want the Fed cutting rates because the economy is deteriorating. That's not the scenario they want. They want a soft landing, which includes rate cuts. And perhaps even if we got 1 or 2, the market can absorb that. But 3 may be a little bit more difficult at this point, given that we've just seen an uptick in expectations for first quarter GDP. Now, again, we're going to see a lot more data coming in, but for the first quarter, 2.3% GDP, which is not stellar, but it certainly is solid. Now, again, there'll be still data coming in that's from the first quarter, and that will be absorbed. But the fact remains that the economy, and again, thinking about the payroll report, the expectations are that the unemployment rate could come back down to 3.8%, that average hourly earnings come down just a bit, but will it be enough to slow down consumer spending? One last thing on this, Jeff, is that we always talk about gross domestic product, but also the GDI, domestic income. They're starting to meld, they're starting to come in. And the last figure we had showed that we're seeing a balance in that, in those two numbers. It's something that the market has been paying very close attention to. So this economy is resilient. This economy doesn't disappoint. And the fact of the matter is, the question is, what does the Fed do in light of this? And we're going to hear this week, I think, from what the doves have to say and what the hawks have to say. And I think at the end of this week, this picture may just change and change markedly, depending on what they have to say.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we'll get to the jobs report later, but certainly, you know, that has the potential to, you know, push yields a little bit higher. We'll see. Could change Fed rate, like a rate cut expectations. I saw a report from a pretty prominent economist suggesting that weather and seasonal adjustments could lift that job number above expectations. So we'll have we'll have to see. Well, if the market knows that that's why, then it won't maybe care.
It won't matter as much, yeah.
But we'll see. That is, you know, now that we've got the strong manufacturing numbers from this morning in the books, the market's reacted to that. The next key data point is certainly that jobs report on Friday. So let's turn to your weekly commentary for this week, Quincy. It's nice when it lines up where I have you as a guest and you wrote the commentary. So the topic is IPOs, you know, which I think are interesting as a risk barometer. So I guess, you know, the question is why should we care? How do you interpret the, you know, the recent uptick in IPO activity?
Well, I mean, it's healthy because when you, there's the pipeline, right? The pipeline actually is filled. The question is whether or not they take these companies to market. And when they do, they have to factor in so many aspects and components of the market and the economy and risk. And therefore, the more companies that come to market and do well, the more it helps propel other companies to come to market and go public. One of the issues for this market happens to be whether or not the venture capital firms and private equity firms that got involved with all of these companies, you know, during the period of rates next to nothing, in fact, many, many periods negative when you factored in inflation, whether or not they're prepared to take a haircut, that just means that they don't make as much money as they wanted to make. And then, you know, that this is to pay back their shareholders. So the question is, or their investors, I should really say. So that is important. So what happens is, in a market such as we've had that has moved up so dramatically, you would think that the IPO market would be sensational. You would think that it would be gangbusters. However, hovering over the market is the money that was lost when the SPAC companies came into the public market, and lots of money was lost and it hasn't been forgotten. So this market is being very careful. Now, I would say that when we look at it, anything associated with AI is doing well. The market is also focused on Reddit. Reddit, a social media, almost a pure social media company that is helped by their revenue from advertising, but they have hooked up with Google coming in and looking at the data and perfecting their own models, a little bit of an AI tilt to it. What's happening is Reddit has been seen as the bellwether to whether or not they can do well and can they bring in other sectors? Because again, if it's a tech name and it's doing well, okay, we understand that. If it is a pure AI play, which we have in this latest round, yes, that will do well as investors gobble up those names. But Reddit is something different than that. And what we're seeing this week and the very end of last week is a pressure on that initial share price. The initial share price was in the 30s, so it was the pop that happened right afterwards where it moved up into the high 40s. But it is hovering there. We need to watch to make sure that it holds there and then actually sees more investors coming in. Many of the analysts have come forward and put a hold on Reddit, and that may be affecting it. Some folks are calling it a meme stock. Oh my goodness, you say meme and people get really nervous. But if Reddit can make it and maintain the higher end of the initial launch and even go back up into the 50s, it would be very helpful for the overall market. So again, what the IPO market absorbs and what it suggests is actually whether or not you have a strong climate for companies to come to market, whether or not the geopolitical environment hurts the climate, obviously for obvious reasons, and whether or not the entire focus on lower interest rates, whether or not that comes to the market and helps those companies, because many of these companies need to have a lower rate to service their debt. Many of them have debt. And when you go on your roadshow with the institutional investors, you want to show and give concrete examples that the lower interest rate is helping service whatever debt they have. If you can't do that, the question then becomes, do you really want to go and launch in what is now a high interest rate environment within our period? A lot of folks say to me, Jeff, oh, come on, Quincy, 5%, 7%, we've been there, 8%. Yes, we have been there, but not when you started this period of negative interest rates, right? And that skews everything. So this is why it's extremely important. Our market that has done so well should also have seen a strong pipeline, a calendar for companies coming to market going gangbusters. That has not been the case.
Let's go to this next slide. And that kind of, I guess, supports your point. Things have picked up a little bit with Reddit, with some other IPOs this year. This is a chart showing, you know, the last chart just ended at 2023, showed you IPOs by year. You saw that big spike in 2021. A lot of that, as you mentioned, was the SPACs, Quincy, the special purpose acquisition companies, I believe is what that stands for. It's like a different way of doing an IPO where you create a shell company and then a private company is absorbed into the public shell. Backdoor way of doing an IPO. Anyway, we didn't see many IPOs 2022, most of 2023. Then late last year and now early this year, they started to pick up. So, you know, this will be interesting to watch, as you suggest, Quincy. If we get continued supportive environment for risk taking, right? Supportive capital markets. We've certainly got a good stock market, high level, but we need a little bit more than that. We should see more companies come to market. And this, you know, it's all about performance, Quincy. So this chart just shows you the Renaissance IPO index. You know, the newly public companies go into this index and you can see how they're trading. I think they come out of the index after 2 years. So not only do you have, you know, the recent IPOs, the Reddits and the ARM Holdings and things like that coming in here, but you have some IPOs that maybe people have forgotten about from a couple years back as well. And what you see here that's interesting, Quincy, is you had this huge spike and performance was tremendous, in 2021 and into early 2022, and then it just collapsed.
Yes. Right?
But it's gotten a little bit better recently. So, you know, what do you attribute that to? What does this mean?
I attribute it to the strength in the economy, that it's solid, not stellar, so stellar that it keeps the Fed from cutting rates. And that, if folks are interested in other sectors, remember, you know, AI could probably do exactly what they've done in the market, become a real tight market. But what you want to see is a broadening in the market. And at least we're seeing that, Jeff, in the small and mid-cap space. When you look at what's doing well and where the allocations are going, it's going to industrials, it's going to technology, it is going to healthcare, that includes pharma and includes biotech. It's going across the board, which is healthy, and it shows that there's a broadening in the market. And that's exactly what the IPO market needs. It needs a broadening. So it's not just based on having, you know, AI-related names. You know, what's also interesting is when we go back and look at the market, you remember Kava? You ever see the sure. Kava? Yeah, that had a really good launch. That was a couple of years ago now. And it was food-based. And people were like, oh my gosh, how could we have that? It's almost as if you are so attuned to technology that you can't believe anything else can go public.
Yeah, they're trying to be the next Chipotle in a different category.
Yes, exactly. Middle Eastern food.
Yeah. Stock has had quite a run. So yeah, that's a great point about seeing different kinds of stocks go public successfully, because that's what we're watching for in the S&P 500 or broader, the Russell 3000. We want more than just tech pushing us higher. We're starting to see that, right? As we talked about earlier, now we could see it in the IPO market maybe, and that'll be confirmation that that broadening out that so many people have been looking for is actually happening. And so you could end up with, you know, the high flyers maybe correcting a little bit, but the broad indexes maybe not correcting as much. Exactly. Because some stuff works as other stuff doesn't. So that's a really important point that we'll continue to watch, certainly. So thanks for that, Quincy. Again, LPL.com on the research tab, we got our weekly market commentary that Quincy put together. Really good. It was a little bit of a team effort, but Quincy,
Jeff. By the way, folks, Jeff is my proofreader and editor. He's the best.
I appreciate that. I got a lot of experience. I think I started working on the weekly market commentary 10 years ago. So hope you enjoy that one. Let's go to the week ahead, Quincy. We already teased this a little bit. The jobs report is Friday. That's going to be the big number of the week. 200,000 is consensus. You know, who knows if seasonals and weather lift us above that, but there's just no doubt that the labor market has slowed a bit and the economy is slowing, not a lot, but is slowing. And so, you know, whether this March number is good or bad, it's just what's important, I think, is the trend, right? This trend of slowing, this trend of cooling. And that's why you continue to hear the Fed talk about getting close to a cut. So anything else on the jobs report or any other data that you think is worth noting here?
Well, yeah, I mean, when we look under the hood on Friday, you'll see a lot of commentary regarding wages. Remember, the Fed does not want to see wage growth climbing too much, because then companies say, well, we need to get paid for this. We may raise our prices. You don't want to see that. Also, with higher wages, that usually leads to more consumer spending, right? And that could ignite inflation. So the Fed wants it not bad, not great, but just right. And they may get that, because the expectations are that hourly earnings have come down just a tad, but enough to placate worries that the wages are just skyrocketing. So that's one thing we're going to look for. We're going to look for also hours worked. This is one that I think is very important, because it indicates the health of the economy. Do I need my workers there for a full week of hourly wages, or is it slowing down? So we'll watch that. And of course, Jeff, as we always watch, how many jobs were created in the private sector and how many from government? I love that a lot of people say, well, government doesn't count. Well, you know what? It does, because people get paid and then they go and they spend their money. But overall, we want to get a sense of the economy. One last thing is that the initial unemployment claims, which is widely followed by economists, are healthy. Yet, while we're seeing a little bit of issue, just a tad, we're keeping our eye on it, are continuing claims. That is actually inching higher, not surging higher, inching slowly higher, which indicates that folks may be having trouble getting another job right away. So we'll keep our eye on that, because that would then suggest a little bit more pressure within the infrastructure, if you will, of the labor market.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I'm not sure. I think they call it the SOM rule after the Economist.
Claudia Sum,
right? I'm not sure that that's going to work again here. Maybe we've already shown that it's not going to work.
She says it may not work.
She even said that. So there you go. So that just means that if you get a certain increase in unemployment over a certain period of time, that signals recession. It had worked. I mean, frankly, leading indicators used to work well. Now they don't. Yield curve seemingly
this material was provided by LPL Financial, so, is for general information only, you know, and is not intended to watch provide jobless specific claims, advice or recommendations.
It will eventually precede.
There is no assurance that the views or strategies discussed are suitable for all investors, or will yield positive outcomes.
A tight job market
investing
and then go
involves
into recession,
risk, including possible loss of principal.
So
any economic forecast
that signal will work at some point.
May not develop as predicted and are subject to change. References to markets, asset classes and sectors are generally regarding the corresponding market index.
Maybe we start all to see some deterioration late this year.
Indexes cannot be invested into
to
directly.
The point where
index
you could end up getting kind of a stalled economy.
The performance of any investment. You know, all performance reference is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All information referenced in the podcast is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor and broker dealer, member FINRA and SIPC. Insurance products are offered through LPL or its licensed affiliates. To the extent you are receiving investment advice from a separately registered investment advisor that is not an LPL
government spending coming through that people aren't talking a lot about, I don't think.
With respect to such entity. If your financial professional is located at a bank or credit union, please note that the bank or credit union is not registered as a broker dealer or investment
stimulus
advisor.
Programs
these products and services
from the Biden
are
administration,
being offered
that spending
LPL
is still
or its
coming through. In fact,
which
I think
are separate
this year
entities
might be the
from
peak year
and not
for,
affiliates of the bank or credit union.
Inflation
securities insurance offered
so
through
this
LPL
is why we're getting government
or its
jobs.
Affiliates are not insured
right.
by
Maybe
the FDIC
don't buy them,
or
value
NCUA
them as much,
or any government
those are coming through,
not bank
and they are
or credit
supporting
union
the economy.
Guaranteed,
so
not bank or credit union deposits or obligations.
I think Jeff Roach would agree with me on this, that this economy, at least in the very short term, might continue to surprise the bears and remain resilient.
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, I'm no economist either, but I really am. But I'm just a consumer, and I look around and I see. But we have to appreciate, though, that the lower wage earners are having a difficult time. This is concrete, and they are having trouble. Interest rates are higher. They're using their cards. Delinquencies are picking up. And we're also seeing more cars being taken away because folks can't keep up with the payments. So you have that. But on top of that, though, you have a healthier environment. And the question is, what does the Fed pay attention to? And they, by necessity, they have to pay attention to the entire picture, not just the lower level. One last thing I want to mention here, if I may, Jeff, is that I have noticed that Chairman Powell has been invoking the labor mandate more and more as a reason to perhaps have to cut rates. We've been so used to his talking about the price stability getting to that 2% level. That's been the narrative for, it seems like, years, actually. But over the last number of speeches that he's given, including at the press conference from the Fed meeting, he has mentioned the labor market more and more. And that is the Fed's other mandate, to create an environment of sustainable economic growth, which is the labor market. And he has come actually out very clearly and said that could be another reason that we cut rates. So the market has been shifting a little bit in terms of his thinking. But certainly he sees the data and sees that the economy remains solid. It's not stellar anymore. It's just solid. And you know what? Solid is good. It's good for the stock market and it's good for most of the country.
Yep, absolutely. That's a great note to end on. So thanks so much for that, Quincy.
Thank you.
Appreciate your insights. Thanks everybody for listening to another LPL Market Signals. We'll certainly continue to follow all of that here for you. From week to week. So we'll be back with you next week. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Hope you all had a nice holiday weekend, and we'll be back with you next time. See you then. Take care,
Thank
everybody.
You, Jeff. Thank you.